Welcome to Mac and Cheese. I'm Mac Mail.
And Graham Hicks.
And in this episode, we're kind of doing a part two to our last episode because we put it out there and did the recording and then some big news came.
Boy, a whole pile can happen real fast in this province.
It changes
very quickly. In the interim,
quickly.
Since we last recorded that one, Madam Redford, Sunny, was on a Tuesday, said press conference
Wednesday.
At 6. Was it Wednesday? Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Press conference at 6. No questions afterwards. You know, what is she going to say?
Yeah.
And of course, as we all know, whatever it was, I'd be fascinated to know what the final straw was that, and I suppose some books will come out at some time that'll have all the insider stuff, but was she forced to resign or was it a question of, okay, the Wild Rose has found some more dirt, you know, on expenses or whatever, and they're going to hold them till the election, and did the party executive say to her, either you resign or you're gone? Or did she say, okay, it's enough, I'm out of here? I wonder if we'll ever know.
I don't know. And the way that she came out that night and did her press conference was I think, a little crazy. Like, I was following it on Twitter, and people were like, you're burying the lead, because she came out and she sounded like the premier. She sounded upbeat, actually. She was talking about successes, and then all of a sudden it took a turn toward, okay, I'm resigning.
She wanted to relish her last few minutes.
Maybe.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Come on, let's get to the point here. But you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah.
And again, that's just an indication of a personality that is indomitable, might be the polite word. That reminds me a lot of Maggie Thatcher, without the track record and without the astound brilliance that Maggie Thatcher did. But that at the very end, did you watch the movie Maggie Thatcher or Thatcher, whatever it was?
No, I didn't watch it.
By the very end, they said it's quite accurate. She had alienated everybody in her own party, and they had to pull out the knives. And she felt terribly betrayed, but she simply didn't see that she had become impossible to work with.
You think it's similar for Redford? She didn't see?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I think this whole thing was not about, it was a question of style. Because as we talked about in our last podcast, a lot of her policies, she's a very intelligent woman,
yep.
Some good government policies, the whole, whether we agree with the way she spent the money or not, she was at least doing a great job in trying to get the educational infrastructure and the social infrastructures back up and running. And they're getting ready to tackle some pretty hard questions about trying to keep government labor costs down and just trying to control a runaway train.
Did you see Nenshi's comments about the thing afterwards? They interviewed him after she had resigned or made the announcement that she was going to resign, and Mayor Nenshi in Calgary, you know, basically said that they threw her to the wolves. Like, this is the way that we treat smart, you know, intelligent leaders in our province, and it's a party system.
I think Nenshi was way off base with that one.
He seemed to get quite a lot of attention for it, and he seemed like he was really sticking up for her. I thought it was quite interesting, but now of course he's rumored to be running, right? Which is kind of strange.
Where is he coming from?
Because he's not a party guy, right? And
no,
I think he's trying to push back on the idea that party politics leads to these sorts of situations.
Look, Mac. Everybody from her staff on down had said she was very, very difficult to work with. When she first got elected, she didn't have a single caucus member on side. Instead of wooing the caucus and working closely with everybody and saying, we're a team here, she basically said, you guys didn't support me. I don't care about you. I'm going to go do my own little thing, all right? And that was the beginning. This downfall was entirely personal in nature. And for Nevsky to suggest that the Tories, you know, continue to turn on their own or whatever, let's not forget it's also the need to stay in power.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can look back now and Redford came back with a convincing, you know, what did she have, well, over 60 seats out of 87, goes to show once again. You know, the media just can't wait for every election because they think, oh, maybe this time around, the Tory, you know, it's all going to come crashing down. The dynasty's done. Well,
they keep
in retrospect,
back.
You know, much as we like Ed Stelmach, they probably did the right thing because they came back with a huge majority. It's like any other being, any other animal or corporate thing, its main desire is to survive and live and stay in power.
Yep.
And to do so, you do whatever it takes.
Yep. No, that makes sense. I mean, to underscore, you know, the fact that she had some positive policies and just didn't get the team together to make some of those things happen. You know, I thought it was interesting that both Nenshi and Iveson had nothing but positive things to say about Redford. I think part of that is a bit of uncertainty about who the next premier is going to be. Will they be friendly to cities or
not?
But
let's not forget as well that this will be her legacy. These thrusts have started. They've proved to be working. They're going over in the cities. This is where I mean that this party can heal itself very, very quickly. The platforms are fairly solid.
Yeah.
You know, and when you go into another election, you're 6 months from picking a new leader. You get someone who's going to be fairly moderate. They're going to keep up this stuff as long as they can financially. I'm not going to write off these Tories whatsoever. Like, it's going to be a really interesting election. And Danielle Smith herself is very, very bright. She has two or three other people around her who seem to be very, very bright. But the rest of them? I don't know.
There's some concern, definitely, about the rest of the Wild Rose.
And you're at a point now where you're very weak in the cities. Although, I suppose in Calgary, they're quite a bit stronger.
The Wild Rose, yeah.
Yeah, but who is the quality of candidate they'll attract in the cities to run? You know, how will they be able to control their fanatical right? I'm sure they probably will this time around, because I see them very much as sort of like the early reform days, which had to go through the same process of weeding out the wackies.
Yeah.
Right. But I see a Tory party that's going to revitalize. And once again, this whole nonsense about they're running out of money. You know, the big money sits in the sideline. They're watching a horse race. They figure who's got a chance of winning. Hey, that number three guy just might win, so we better put a third of our money into that one, you know. It's all politics and power, baby, and don't look at it any other way.
So how many seats do the Wild Rose have currently?
Wild Rose are now sitting at 17.
So let's say, for argument's sake, 18 of those Tories decide they're going to go form their own new party. They become the official opposition.
Number one, they won't go and form their own party now. They were leaving because they're totally dissatisfied with the Alison Redford style.
So you think it's all down to Redford?
Yep.
Next leader, there'll be no appetite for those Tory MLAs to leave?
No. They'll sum up their situation. They'll look around. Unless they're really on the outs with the party, a guy like Steve Young, who maybe ostracized himself by speaking too soon against Redford, perhaps he might jump. But I don't. Only the severely disaffected will, and the source of that disaffection is gone. And what's best in it for you? I hate to sound so cold-blooded, but yeah, it's all about what's in it for them.
Yeah.
And when you change parties, you 9 times out of 10 it never works. You're seen as a turncoat.
Yep.
You're suspect for the rest of time. Very difficult thing to do.
So the narrative that Danielle Smith and her party are putting out there right now is that it wasn't Redford, it wasn't just the leader, it's a fundamentally broken party.
What do you expect them to do?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, the way that the media picks up, for instance, the idea that they were so close to winning the last election.
The media are a bunch of sheep. Ralph Klein always
called
it.
You and I are part of this, so.
No, I'll tell you a very interesting difference. I'll tell you a very interesting difference. Ralph Klein called it under the domitis,
yeah.
Right, to which he himself succumbed after many, many years. But you stay in that little pressure cooker. You've got 20 media that are all in there, and these are the guys that write the legislature and legislative and all that. They don't talk enough to Ma and Pa Normal out there. There was the famous Stelmach election, right, where the Journal was determined that Stelmach was going to lose. They ignored their own polls and everything else. Neil Waugh at The Sun and myself as a quasi-political writer, Neil as our business/political writer, we had the week leading up to the election, we said, this is in the bag. Look at the numbers. He's leading in Calgary. He's leading in Edmonton. He's leading rural. He's going to have a major sweep at Stelmach. Everyone is saying, he's going down. He's going down. They were so convinced in their own heads. They'd all been together so long. They decided it just wasn't going to work. They made a groupthink decision, which had no reflection on the reality of what was going out there. And this has happened time after time after time. And this is where I sit there and say, this party is not dead. This party is now being seen, the groupthink right now, as a party is in total disarray. It can't pull itself together. Oh, nonsense.
So the media, the traditional media is one thing, but what about social media? I mean, that had a huge impact in the last election, probably for the first time in a provincial election, that it was a real key, you know, factor in how things played out.
A very interesting point.
That could change quite a bit, right?
This time, are you also suggesting that social media is going to be any better at reading the reality. I think the other thing...
No, I'm suggesting that politicians can use it more effectively to their advantage than maybe they would have in the past, relying on, you know, mainstream press to get their not their stories, but their narratives out there, you know, what they want
to
have
come across.
I'm not
sure I'd even call it narratives. To me, it's just the ability to... It's the ability of the independent journalist, what's left of us, to read things without... You know, any politician is completely hawking the party line. They're not going to say what the reality is. They're not paid to say what the reality is. Now, they're paid to toe the party line, to push the party line no matter what, to say the most ridiculous, outrageous things because it's party policy and because I want to get elected. But we're talking about independent thinkers. My question is, most bloggers are not have the luxury of 10, 20 hours being paid to research and try to make as objective an analysis as possible, or don't have the experience or the skills or the intuition, so they're going to mouth off just on what they want to believe. And so I'm not so sure that even though we do have a whole entire social media, that that could provide some sort of more insightful analysis of what's going on.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think the bloggers have any more or are any better off than the media. It's not like the people that we pay to go down to the legislature also have 20 hours to spend doing research, coming up with some objective thing. Well, they run from one thing to another, and their deadline is to get that thing up on the web as quick as possible, right? Let's not pretend that the media put a ton more effort into it than anyone else. What I was suggesting was more the politicians themselves, right?
Yeah.
Them really using the tools to change the course of it. Because like you said, they're sheep. So if all of a sudden, you know, on social media, a whole bunch of people start talking about, let's say, the Alberta Party becoming a force in the election now that, you know, the PCs are seen in a bit of disarray, you know, don't you think the media will sort of pick up that thread and run with it a little bit? That seems to be what happens, right?
So it's a very interesting point. But it always seems to, you never know what's going to go viral and what isn't.
Right. If we did, we'd be rich, right?
Yeah.
You and I, we'd be doing
but,
viral videos.
You know, by your suggestion that someone who's doing a real good job of saying, hey, the Liberals are really good here, Raj Sherman could be a great premier, could start to catch on, or that the Alberta Party starts to catch on because they manipulate social media very, very well.
I don't know. Throwing it out there. I mean, like you said, for the Tories in particular, 58 seats is a pretty enviable position to be in. You could lose quite a few and still have a majority, right? So
yeah,
more you'd need to lose more than social media would have any impact on. Or
I'm still going to go back much more on not. Let's stay away from social platforms, but on just what those policy platforms are, what the perceptions of the parties are going to be. And I think the biggest thing that the Tories have to shake off. Their conundrum right now is they elected a young, progressive, female, white, city-oriented, you know, and it blew up in their faces.
Yeah.
What do they do now? Do they elect another young, suave, city-oriented person to be their leader? Do they, if they settle for a Dave Hancock type, they'll be seen as the party of the old white guys?
Yep.
Did you see the picture in the paper or here and there when Hancock was first announced? He was surrounded by members, senior members of the party, right? Of the
caucus?
No, it wasn't caucus, the party itself.
Okay.
They were all old white guys over 60, and it was embarrassing. Now, there were four of them around him, and it just looked like this was a death. You're a PR guy, saying, oh my God. And it was very interesting because when he was sworn in 2 days later, you could see the PR guys, the spin guys had been at work. They had every female caucus member, every minority guy in as tight as they could on that picture, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the image that they have to portray.
Yeah.
And I don't see Danielle. She's not really strong with the multicults. And the multicults are is she strong with youth? You know, youth like her, but they don't, Wild Rose really scared them off with that gay bashing the last time out.
Yeah.
Do they turn to Raj and the Liberals because they see nothing else out there? Do we end up having much more of a typical provincial legislature where you had three parties all within shouting a distance of each other with one barely getting a majority, which is the case in, you know, BC. It's been gone back and forth between Liberals and NDP and whatever other party they invented. In Saskatchewan party is fairly new. Manitoba's been a three-way race forever. Ontario goes back and forth. Maybe this is the election. Maybe this is the Alberta that sort of emerges, that'll be much closer. But I still think it's probably going to be the Tories.
So even if they give up some seats to the other guys and it becomes a bit more equivalent, Tories still going to take it, you think?
Yeah.
Who does their leader then become? So for the next 6 months, good luck getting anything done pretty much from the province, because they're going to be busy picking a leader, right?
Again, there is a certain legacy here, which no one really has picked up on, is that Redford did lay down a pretty solid plan of action, which Hancock will be paying, you know, will be carrying out. There will be more schools opening. There will be more roads fixed. There will be the public service trying to keep, you know.
Take for example,
I don't think
it's
all going to come crushing to a halt.
Well, take for example the LRT.
The money's been committed.
But that wouldn't, if that hadn't happened before she'd resigned, there's no way that would have happened until they had a new leader,
okay,
right?
But what else are we waiting for 100 mil?
Well, that's just it. Who knows? There was no sign of the LRT anywhere. It wasn't on the radar. We were expecting it to be in the budget, and then all of a sudden it comes out of thin air. So who knows?
But my point
what
now,
else
is we
would
got it.
Thin air. Yeah, you know, well.
And I don't think we have anything else that we're really, really pushing that we need the commitment of $500 million in the next 6 months.
I mean, there's also a difference between announcing schools and then actually putting shovels in the ground, which is yet to happen.
Yeah, but once you've announced them, once you got them in the budget process,
it's hard to take it back, right? It's hard to take it back.
They do start to happen. That's a fait accompli. You know,
let's say I'm less optimistic than you are that they'll continue pushing that agenda forward over the next 6 months, but
it's going to get them elected.
Well, who are they going to be putting forward as the leader then, do you think? Who's your money on? There's lots of names out there right now,
I would
right?
go but either with Ken, who's the guy? He was the energy minister.
Ken Hughes?
Ken Hughes, thank you. Ken Hughes, or I think the dark horse is going to be our dear friend Steve Mandel.
What about
if Mandel goes in?
What about like Doug Horner or one of those guys that's been much more visible?
Will Doug run? That's my question. Or will his advisor say, Doug, you're too much a lead role with a government that's been kind of soiled. I think they can service. No, that's a real interesting one if you're trying to figure out who you want.
Yeah.
But maybe he's the guy to hold the rural. Is he popular in Edmonton? Neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Is he popular in Calgary? Neither here nor there. Did he show himself to be a brilliant, intelligent political leader as Minister of Finance? I ask you.
I think he did a fine job. I think he did. I think he was seen positively.
If he gets traction out of the gate, would he be a good premier?
Could be. I mean, he ran last time, right? You said so. He's maybe got a bit more experience about, you know, what has to happen if he were to become the leader for the PCs. So you know, he strikes me as, like you said, he's not too rural or too civic. He's somebody who could straddle the line a little bit for the party.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Whereas, you know, like you said, Redford skewed, you know, definitely one way. I think Steve Mandel, though he's a city guy, would kind of skew old white guy again, right? Which maybe isn't what you're looking for.
And maybe I'm being an optimistic here, but in the pro Mandel, I think he transcends a lot of stuff. That he, in Edmonton, he had the support of most of the under 40 crowd. He had the Don Iverson crowd supported Mandel. You can be over 60 and be a fairly reasonable populist.
Yeah.
But you have to be young thinking, and I think that Mandel is fairly young thinking.
Well, and aside from Edmonton, like, would Calgary voters like him? Would the rest of the province like him?
At the same time, everybody says the same thing. If somebody's from Calgary, they say, well, yeah, but will he sell in Edmonton or will she sell in the rural?
Yeah.
I mean, no matter where you come from, that question comes up.
No, that's true. It's fair enough. But he was very visible for a long time.
It's going to be really interesting. Now, right? And what about Lukaszek?
I don't know if you even want to, is the other thing, right? Like, what's in it for Mandel?
Public service.
Yeah, Lukaszek, I mean, he's certainly been one of the more visible vocal leaders, right, in the PC party.
But was that visibility and vocality an asset or
I think
or
a negative a thing, right? A detriment. Definitely with what happened with post-secondary, at least in Edmonton, it was really perceived negatively, right? So
he'd have a bit of a mountain to climb.
Yeah.
If he were to win, there'd be an awful lot of people seeing what kind of bridge bending he would be doing.
Yeah.
Too bad, because he did have, you know, he has a certain charisma about him and kind of a youthful guy and the suave hair or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that count for anything more?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it makes a difference from the point of view of once you're the leader, you can carry some momentum and you can not come off looking like you've just been hit by a ton of bricks all the time, right? Like, I think he'd be able to take the pressures of the job, I guess is what I'm trying to say, and portray that positively. But
could some guy
come
in? Can
he build the leaders in the caucus that he needs to? I don't know.
Do we have rookie MLAs? There's a couple of young guys that are quite impressive. The fellow from Mill Woods. I'm sorry, names are bad. Doug, but
we need sometimes wonder, could, list of names here with us.
Could someone come charging out who's made a name in caucus, who could somehow rally the kind of force to take the Iveson kind of charisma and mm-hmm. have enough experience to bring enough people on side to suddenly go viral, and to suddenly become the guy that everyone gets excited about. And get the right momentum and build towards a convention where one or two of the old guys are up against them, but he manages to finish in the 1-2 and then takes it 2 weeks later, or she.
Right.
Is there somebody?
Nobody comes to mind.
Yeah, this is the weird thing.
But who knows, right? Part of the definition of being one of those people is they come out of nowhere. So the ones you least expect.
Except that when you look back in my lifetime, Lawrence DeCore, who is the great white hope of the Liberals, came as close as any Liberal was going to get to becoming government, had worked on that project for 10 years, right? Peter Lougheed started when he was about 22 or so, and he actually took power the first time, or was the first six elected, was about 12 years later. I mean, he rebuilt that party. Most of these guys who look as young and fresh and coming out have been at it for a long time.
Right.
And I don't see any of those types.
Well, I guess we're months away from finding out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But maybe Redford's legacy will be in that, despite her awkward personality and the things that led to her downfall, she has left a reasonably good set of initiatives that'll carry them over the next year and make it fairly easy for the party to defend itself in the next election.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who they pick to be their leader as they go into battle once again. What cheese did you bring for us?
I don't understand why your gang hasn't kicked up anybody yet. You know, the hashtaggers.
Well, you know me, much more interested in municipal than provincial, so maybe that's
true.
Maybe that's true of a lot of people in the generation, right? I don't know.
What do we have here, dear listeners and dear Adam and dear Mac, is some Parmesan from the Cavern. Parmesan Romanero. A nice
Parmigiano Reggiano.
Good old Parmigiano. What do you know? The stuff that you crumble up and sprinkle on your spaghetti and sprinkle on everything.
Yeah, you pretty much put it in anything with pasta, right?
I was making some mushroom caps the other night. And I went to get the Parmesan. Oh, my God, no Parmesan. What a letdown.
You know what's crazy about Parmesan? When we were kids, we'd always have the, like, green Kraft.
Yeah, the Kraft.
Container of Parmesan or whatever that, like, never goes bad or somehow magically. And then once you get older and you start buying, like, a block of Parmesan like this and you grate it yourself, it's just like, oh, I'm never going back.
Ain't it the truth? So will our next leader like Kraft Parmesan or will he be a Cavern kind of guy?
Or gal. All right, that's another episode of Mac and Cheese. Check us out at macandcheese.ca.
Until the next time.